This time on Kawaii-Fi Radio, catgirls are back in vogue, but where did they come from? Surprise, surprise, it's the Japanese.
Japanese people doing things on a Japanese anime podcast?
I know, right? Whoa. Who would have thought? Tifa's watched the live-action Avatar.
But it's always fun to compare. I also love a little bit of a hate watch, I'm not going to lie to you. So.
And Aaron explains why anthropomorphic cat characters are no longer the villains.
Girl cats are very rude and will stab you in the
face.
Yes,
they will. Yes, they will.
Boy cats are very loving and doting. Previously, they dealt with girl cats, and then they found out about boy cats.
That's your explanation.
Wi-Fi Radio!
Konnichiwa, and welcome to tune in to Kawaii-Fi Radio, the podcast where we dive in the world of anime, manga, all things otaku culture. I'm Kyle, with me is Aaron, and we have Tifa down below. I think that's a...
Hello.
Yeah, down there is. this episode, Catgirls. I know you were expecting Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, but it's Catgirls.
Bait and switch.
There is a reason for that. Our Patreons are now aware, and they will be very pleased if we manage to pull off what we're planning. However... Catgirls are in the zeitgeist again, and I guess we're going to do that.
Yeah, we've got a lot of catgirls this season, so we're going to look back at some of the previous catgirls that have made a big impression on anime and manga and just pop culture in general.
And we're going to also give you a deep dive on where the heck this idea came from.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, it's the Japanese. I mean, like, I know.
Japanese people doing things on a Japanese anime podcast.
I know, right? Whoa. Who would have thought? But look, that's what this episode's about. Join us in the comments on YouTube if you've got some things you want to share and Catgirl shows you love. But let's get started with what we've been watching.
I have no idea how old I am or where I came from.
Daddy! Ohayou!
Hey, guys! I gotta go!
I have to know!
Hooray! I did the thing!
Oni-chan, nani wo miru?
What we're watching? Oh, we had far too much fun recording that sting.
I remember it vividly. We were at your parents' place.
Yeah,
and all of us were lined up, and we all took turns doing it. Like, at first, I put on like a super feminine voice, and you're like, eh. We went through everyone else, and then we came back to me, and I was like, Oni-chan, and you're like. Yes!
And then I was immediately like, well, we have to use Fist of the North Star for that scene. So we're going to kick off with Tifa because we're very happy to have you back after you've been sick.
I know.
So let's talk Avatar, Last Airbender, live action.
Season 2.
Season 2.
Season 2.
Can we throw any more words into that?
The Reckoning. look, we know live action is generally not well received. There have been exceptions, obviously, such as One Piece. What's the vibe with this? Because our understanding just from not watching it in social media is not good.
Yeah, so, like, I watched the... Firstly, I've been watching this with, like, people in my Discord, so it's really funny to just, like... have a good laugh with other people about what's happening. And we watched the first season, and our takeaway from the first season was it's not as good, but we generally, like, we knew that was going to be the case. There's definitely a lot of things that need improvement. Mm-hmm. But it is also, like, a first season. The actors, they're quite young. It looks like they're trying. Potentially, like, there are some good elements here, so potentially they could improve mm-hmm. on season two. Season two comes along. We watched the first episode.
No.
That was not it. The second episode is much better than the first episode, but the first episode, let me tell you, it's like things are just happening and you're just like, why is that? What? This makes no sense. The second episode's an actual episode, but it's just like they just needed to put things in there, and then this becomes like a feeling throughout the rest of the season of just, this was something in the original show. We changed around other things, so we don't know where to put this. So we're just going to put this here now instead of over here. And it just feels so, even though I think it has like a really large budget, it feels like it's so budget restrained because everything happens in the same place at the same time. And you're like, why are you doing that when that's not like necessary? These characters don't all need to be here. It just doesn't make sense for this to be happening in this way. So, and because of that, it just feels like they have such a like budget restriction that they have to get everything done in one location so that they don't spend too much money. That's what it feels like. And it's really unfortunate as a viewer to watch something and you're just like, oh, Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, we've already heard, like, obviously there's a lot of issues with the writing. We know there's a lot of issues with the way it's being handled, which is why the original creators left. And we also know there's been a lot of commentary on how the acting is bad. But as you've mentioned as well, these actors aren't necessarily bad actors outside of this.
Yeah, so there is definitely, like, their adult cast. Those are all, like, really fantastic actors, like Daniel Day-Kim. We have Deechan Lockman, I think her name is. She played Gemma in Severance. She's also in this. We have, like, so many incredible actors that we've seen before, and we're just like, oh, yeah, even the guy that plays Uncle Iroh, he's fantastic in Kim's Convenience Store. But him in this, it is a very different character, and he's got kind of the right... In the first season, we were like, he's trying, but they're not giving him those moments where he can be more lighthearted. It's very much the same thing as the live-action movie, where it's very dramatized, right? So they don't give him those moments, and then in the second season, it feels like he just gave up, which is, like, he's a great actor, and, like, a lot of them are good actors. It's just unfortunate that we get this. And then with the younger cast... You know, the kid that plays Aang, he showed, like, a lot of promise in the first season, but obviously he grew up very quickly. And because of that, with the writing, they tried to make him more angsty this season as well, which doesn't...
It's just not Aang.
Character.
Angsty.
Yeah.
Oh,
no. And, like, Zuko as well, we were like, last season he was the highlight for us. We were like, he is trying his absolute hardest, and he, like, feels like Zuko. Even his voice had the right, like, intonation for it. And then this season we're kind of like, what is happening with this character? Because it feels like we don't care.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Toph is the new addition for this season, and I think her actress is really good. She's doing a good job, but again, it's just like... They're not giving the heart to these characters, and they've got these, like, quippy one-liners, and that's all that they get, really. A good thing I will say, though, is I think episode 3, we got a really touching moment between Sokka and Katara. It's not in the original, and it's just, like, a moment where they actually talk about their grief, because obviously Sokka has lost Yue at this point, and they have both lost their mother. And they... never really spoke about Yue in, like, a proper full extent or anything like that. And they bring the, like, whole cactus juice thing a little bit more forward, right, in this scene. So he starts to become a bit more open before it goes crazy. And they actually just get this one really good moment together. And the actors really, they feel like they're siblings in that moment. They feel like they have a good connection. And we were like, oh, that's a very surprising moment that's not in the original, that was a worthy addition to have, but nothing else around it, like, worked. So it was, like, really odd. But
I mean,
yeah,
it sounds to be kind of like that scene in the prequel trilogy of Star Wars, the scene where they discover the pregnancy. Like, there's real chemistry and focus in that scene, but everything around it felt cheap at the time.
Yeah,
like, don't get me wrong. It has aged well, the Star Wars prequel trilogy. However, at the time, you look at it, and even if you look at it now with a critical eye, you go, oh, okay, this scene, the actors really were on point, but everything around it kind of makes it seem like it was a rubbish scene. And it sounds like that might be the same here, but it's something they've added which has improved it, sort of thing, as opposed to, like, all the random scenes they would add in the Harry Potter movies when they could have added useful stuff from the books in those scenes instead.
Yeah. I just feel like because I did watch, like, a few interviews as well. I know that the actors for Sokka and Katara, there are, like, certain things that they're, because they're all very big fans of the original. They were like, there were certain things that they wanted to develop and they wanted to do. And I think that it's pretty gutsy of them to, like, actually come forward and say that, because as a young, newer sort of actor as well, it's kind of difficult to have that sort of conversation in a really big budget production such as this, because I feel like on the opposite side of things, Aang's getting, like, a little shafted, and I don't know if his actor is able to say anything. Like, I could be wrong, like, or maybe he doesn't care, I don't know, but it just feels like, by the way that these two talk about their characters, that they really want to showcase them as best they can, but it's a little difficult, I think, with their chemistry and other actors, but together they work as a good sibling pair, so that's good at least.
I mean, look, at least that it works for the, for them too, but overall, like, have you finished season two now?
No, we haven't finished it yet because we've been watching it weekly instead of just binge watching it. Fair. And like where we're at the moment, we're like, I don't know, because so the original, we counted the hours, by the way. There's there is only 8 hours difference between the original season and this season, right? Hmm. So that's like not that much that technically would get cut. So why are there so many? I understand changes, like that's fine, but the changes don't make sense to the characters. And like one of my number one complaints was Azula. Like I love Azula and I love the actress that plays Azula. Like I have no problem with her. She's fantastic. She does a great job. But some of the things, like she's more of a manipulative and sly character rather than a brash character in the beginning. Like we know that she has this power and that she's good at manipulating people. We don't need her to be like, oh, I need you two to kill each other. Oh, wait, no, don't do that. Like that kind of thing. She like subtly tells people to do things and then they do it and it's part of her manipulation.
It sounds
so she
like
can get an end result.
Dumbed it down.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is the thing. We are aware that Netflix in particular are telling studios and producers to repeat the get the characters to repeat the points and things in dialogue because people are watching it in the background. No. Stop doing that because that leads to this. It leads to obvious ploys and behavior as opposed to good quality subterfuge and well-written characters.
Do you remember when like there would be twists in things?
Oh, I know, right?
Like they wouldn't tell you. They'd be like tiny little pebbles hinting at it. And like, you go back and you watch it later on. And you're like, oh, that's actually leading to that. That's where they started that idea. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Silo has returned on Apple TV and they're still doing it. All the Apple TV productions are still doing it where there are little bits and pieces around. And are they a bit more obvious than they used to be? Yes, but they're not blatant. They're not going to outright say things. They're not going to spend time repeating it. They're focusing on producing good content. It's all these shows going to Netflix, and unfortunately Netflix are the ones who are paying for all the Japanese live actions, which is resulting in this lower production, lower... They're not treating the audience with respect. They're treating the audience as if they're dumb and not paying attention. And if you want people to engage with your content rather than just have it on in the background, because that's essentially what it is that you've put low-quality content out. That's why people are having it on in the background. You're self-fulfilling your prophecy there.
Yeah.
So,
Like you're saying, if you want people to sit there on their phones and not pay attention, sure, keep doing that. But if you want them to watch what you're doing, make it captivating enough that they put their phones away and go, okay, I need to focus. What's actually happening in the show?
I mean, like, prime example, this season's Ghost in the Shell. You can't be on your phone watching it. There's too much going on. There is too many things going on in the background. There is so much being talked about. It's paced as if you are a Japanese native speaker, and it's good because of it, because they fit a lot in each episode. But Avatar Last Airbender live action season 1 and 2 on Netflix. What would you say? Like, watch it if you dare.
I feel like... So what I do think that is interesting is that people that I know haven't seen the cartoon enjoy the live action because the base story is good no matter what. But like, for us, if you have seen the original and you enjoy it, you probably won't enjoy this as much. But it's always fun to compare. I also love a little bit of a hate watch. I'm not going to lie to you. So it's up to you if you want to go down that route.
Fair enough. All righty. Well, Aaron, you have definitely not been watching Avatar The Last Airbender live action on Netflix. You've been watching Let's Go Kaikigumi, which is from this season.
This season, yeah.
So we didn't obviously mention this in the seasonal preview. What is this?
Okay, so there's a guy who's scared of everything.
I mean, isn't that almost every shonen protagonist?
It's also me. I don't like things. And he gets very easily spooked by things. And then he senses this thing watching over him and he's like very nervous about it. And then it comes out and it's this girl and she's like, she turns her head around, like she does all the blood stuff and he just doesn't react.
Is it because he's frozen up?
No, he's so freaked out, doesn't react. And then it turns out she all the evil spirits and stuff that have sort of like disappeared from the like main line and like not really hanging around anymore and you don't hear about them anymore. Apparently her father was in charge of a company that used to distribute them. He passed away. She's now inherited it and she doesn't know what she's doing. And so she's like trying to figure out how to scare people with these ghosts and spirits and stuff, but she just can't figure it out.
Wow. Okay. Hang on. She's trying to scare people as a business?
Yeah. The business is Kaikikumi.
Whoa, okay. Okay.
It's very silly in that sense. And then, like, she ends up moving in with him and he's trying to help her scare people with it.
So it's not obviously like a massive corporation. It's a small business of some form.
I mean, I think it was a massive corporation, but ever since like it got handed down, it kind of dwindled away. And like everyone stepped aside because they didn't really want... She didn't understand how to handle the company or do anything, so...
Okay. What? Let's Go Mystery Group is what the the literal translation of the Japanese is, because it's Retsu Go Kakigumi. And I guess, yeah.
Isn't that just... Let's go.
Let's go. You are right. Oh my God.
It's Let's Go Kaikikumi.
Yeah. Let's Go Mysterious Group. Michako is the leader of Kaikikumi.
Yep.
She's trying to revive it's a supernatural organization, and the protagonist is unnamed.
Yeah, he doesn't have a name. He's just like this big dude.
Yeah. He does have a face, though. He's not a name. He's not a faceless protagonist, which is good.
Well, you kind of need a face in horror to react.
I mean, you're not wrong. And it does look like there's a lot of good reactions.
There are a lot of good reactions. It's just none to the horror things that she's trying to do. Like, you know the story about the miscounting the steps at the school?
Yeah, yeah.
And like you go down one way and it's 12 and you go up and it's 13.
Yeah.
She's like, what if you lay at the top and you become the 13th stair? And he's like, what? And she's like, yeah. That'll spook people, right? And then people keep tripping over him. And they're like, what are you doing? This is so inconsiderate. And he's like, I'm just trying to help.
Wow. Okay.
So it's really silly in its approach, which I appreciate.
I was going to say, this does sound very much kind of up your alley on like the gag comedy with like... low stakes, but really funny.
Yeah, like, I don't like supernatural thriller horror stuff, but, like, I do enjoy supernatural comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much this. Mm-hmm. Even if the girl looks like a terrifying version of Nefertiti from Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah, she really does. She's got the picture up here. I'm like, oh, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And I've got trauma with Nefertiti because that character messed me up.
I haven't watched enough Hunter and Hunter.
She's a cat girl, so it's on theme.
Oh my God.
Everything comes back to cat girls.
Nyan.
We need the Charlie board from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Everything connects.
Everything's cat girl. Oh, dear. All right. Well, look, this one is also on... this one's a Crunchyroll worldwide as well. A couple of episodes out so far. It's
just silly... Not even spooky, just silly, like, quote-unquote spooky.
Yeah. Fun. So, like, Scooby-Doo spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like but anime.
I mean, that's coming too, but we're not going to talk about that until we get confirmation on who on earth is actually looking after it.
But, like, if you like your silly things like Scooby-Doo and you want one anime, Let's Go Kaikikumi.
Yeah. Let's go.
Let's go.
Wow. All righty. Well, as mentioned, Crunchyroll for that. I finally finished watching Mobile Suit Gundam The Origin. This is an OVA series. It is six films technically, but they're not full film length. Some are 60 minutes, some are about 80. And this is kind of the prequel story that leads to the main Gundam series, the first one in the 1970s of the main storyline. This explains all the political
background, and why the space opera. Spicy with each other.
Exactly. It tells you in particular where Shah comes from. He is the Red Comet. He's the one who's in the Red Gundam. Not Red Gundam, sorry. Red mobile suit.
The Red Zaku, isn't it?
Yeah, the Red Zaku. And it's all about his background and what leads onto it. And that's then led to me reading the manga, which is based on. And it turns out the manga does the original story. So it's Mobile Suit Gundam, the origin manga. The it does the original story, and it gets to, I think, about the end of the original tale from 1979, which is about 50 episodes, and then it goes back and does the prequel info on how we got there before then continuing the story into, like, the other franchises which follow on in that same timeline. It was started kind of releasing, I want to say, like, 2015-ish. Let's be blunt and real here. The original Gundam series from the 70s, it's not very well voice acted, paced, or written.
Especially as a dub.
It's a fantastic story, but it needs reviving. And that's being done as part of the 50th anniversary in 2 years. So that is currently in development over at Sunrise, a full retelling of the original story, keeping all the content in, but fully remastered with a new voice cast and everything from the ground up. Not just like a Blu-ray remaster where we lift up the footage and make it good. That's coming, but the carryover of the way that dialogue was done back then, they have kept in the 2015 prequel series for it. And it's... the dub's rough. Like, don't get me wrong. Some of the voice actors, Shah's voice actor in particular, phenomenal. They did such a good job. But some of the other characters and some of the scenes are so overly dramatic, like silly, like, you know, the classic sort of 80s, no, don't go, and then dragging out the no sound for like a good 10 seconds sort of thing, or a girl screaming, come back, and it's just like, oh.
Chosen one.
Exactly, yeah. And it could be done so much better. And like, because now obviously I'm reading the manga and getting an idea of where this story was based on. And I've been watching this with my brothers, who are both big fans of Gundam. And they're like, this is what we're going to do. We'll get together like once a month and we'll watch one of them each time, or two of them if we can fit it in, and we'll go through. And now I'm like, okay, I want to know about Gundam. So now I'm learning about Gundam, and there's going to be an episode at some point, or maybe a video. We'll see how we go.
Big Zam.
Big Zam.
Big Zam.
Big Zam.
Do you know Big Zam yet?
No, we haven't got to him in the story, but I'm aware of Big Zam.
Big Zam.
So, yeah. But, so I am going to go and put myself through watching the original 1970s show. I will watch it in Japanese instead, so that I don't have to deal with the 1985 voice acting that came with it. but, yeah, it's really good. Like, it's honestly a very accessible entry point to understand the lore and background of the core of Gundam, because we've got so many spin-offs of the Gundam franchise, and there's double the spin-offs series-wise, actually more than that, than there are of the original core storyline, which is referred to as the Universal Century. There's only about 6 series that fit into that, and then all of them, for some reason, have films which kind of like are synopsis films of them. I would suggest watching, find out what format it was released in first and watch it in that, because the films apparently tend to remove a lot of important elements. And if you're going to go down this rabbit hole with me, you want to kind of know all of the politicking. So, like, if you like The Expanse, for instance, and those type of space operas, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mobile Suit Gundam is a space opera. It is politics, combat, interplanetary diplomatics, and then, you know, showing the people at the ground level like they did in The Expanse dealing with it.
Do you have a favorite Gundam?
Not yet.
Not yet. Not so yet. You're not into the RX-78 yet?
I like the RX-78, but the designs... So, because I haven't watched the original series and I've been watching the... in Origin, we get to the point before they've built the Gundam. We're learning about the background of the characters and Amuro's father, how he was away all the time on Side 7, the space station, if you will, / colony, where they were developing this. The problem is that we don't see it. We see the blueprints of it, but the manga that I'm reading of it has quite... They've got color pages, and then they've kind of got ones that are sort of... You know how, like, if you photocopy something, sometimes you can kind of get those weird splotches of, like, grayness or black appearing on the page? There's some of that as well on the version that I'm reading online, because I think that it hasn't had an official digital release, and the platform who bought the rights to share it online were given scans of each page to put online, as opposed to high-quality digital scans. So they're, like, archive copies, if that makes sense. So you'll go through and it's like, okay, this clearly... These couple of pages either have been done this way by accident, or it's a purposeful design choice by the manga creator that hasn't translated well when brought over to digital. So I haven't quite figured that out yet, but I'm in the process of trying to find where I can get the books myself anyway, because it's actually really good. As far as the Origin series, go watch it. It's on Crunchyroll. I believe it's on a couple of other platforms as well. There are two versions of it. There's one where they've put it into a series. Don't bother with it, because they drag out basically, what do we got? I want to say 7 hours of content to 24 episodes. And then you're basically just adding in a recap of 2 minutes at the beginning of every episode, and then adding a recap at the end as a preview at the end. Plus, obviously, you've got 90-second intro, 90-second outro. So you're kind of getting about 14 minutes of content, whereas the films have a brief thing at the beginning which tells you what happened in the previous film and keeps you up to date because they were released years apart. So it's better to go the film route, put aside an hour, watch the film, and then you're like, okay, cool. And then when you watch the next one, it'll give you the recap you need, but you don't sit through, that'll be 4 to 5 recaps for if you're watching the season per film. So, like, you know, that's already half an hour. Yeah. It's really well done. It gives you a good appreciation for kind of some of the backgrounds and the people who get introduced in the main series later on, especially Shah and obviously his origin along with his sister. And is it perfect? No. But it's still very good. And if
there's a reason the franchise has lasted this long and done so well.
Mm. Well, I mean, this is the thing. They treat the Universal Century timeline with such respect that it very rarely gets new stuff unless it is top tier grade. So that's why we've seen so many spin-offs that aren't connected to it. And even some of the stuff that was originally connected to it, they've went and gone, actually, no, this is not actually connected to it. It can be treated as a spin-off, but it is not canon, such as, I think it was Mobile Suit Gundam Thunderbolt, which is like something happening during the combat, but it's a specific unit called the Thunderbolts.
Okay.
Which, surprisingly, predates Thunderbolts of Marvel's design. there's a lot in there, but like things like Mobile Suit Gundam Wing, Iron Blood Orphans, Witch from Mercury, none of that is part of this story. They're all based off the idea of it. So, yeah, it's really good. I'm just like with One Piece, I'm annoyed I put off learning about it and probably getting engaged with it for this long. But, hey, it's great. So, look, if you've got something interesting that we haven't mentioned and you want to drop in the comments that we should check out, please do. We're always looking for new, you know, manga and shows to watch. We're pretty across all the big shonen ones. So, like, you know, you don't need to tell us about Bleach. Well, I was going to say like Bleach or Naruto, or it's like, yeah, we have watched them all in One Piece. And
yeah.
What's the other one? The one which is coming back with the guy, he's the magician in the books. Black Clover. Thank you. Like, we are across them. So it's more kind of like the older niche sort of genre specific ones we seem to be like trying to get info on. And I did get called out again in our Discord about not liking Monogatari, but I found the manga, so I'll see if that's a bit better for me, because the story's fascinating. It's just I can't stand the pretentious way that it's produced as far as the anime goes. I'm just sitting there going, I've watched 3 episodes, and in that time, good 20% of the time has been like, you know, generic stuff on screen, like frame not available and stuff for the sake of art. And it's like, yes, but it interrupts the flow of it. Yeah. And it just feels like you are trying to be cooler than you are. It doesn't feel like it serves a purpose. It's being artsy for the sake of being artsy.
You're not Frieza's brother. You're not cooler.
And like, don't get me wrong, I know there are people who appreciate that. Maybe I'm old and cranky. I don't know.
Oh, man. That's
a vibe, isn't it? Like, but
FIFA can't relate.
For me, that just doesn't connect. So maybe I need to read like the first light novel and manga series to get past that initial thing. And then, because my understanding from everything I've seen from the later series is there's not so much of that.
Okay.
So then maybe I can go on to Neko Monogatari and Bakken Nakamatsari, because they're all...
And then talk about it in the Catgirl episode.
Exactly, yeah. And then, oh no, I have to go back in time for this. Anyway, on that note, time for Catgirls.
Kawaii Fi Radio.
And now for our feature presentation.
Now featuring...
Oh yeah, get that funk going. We haven't used this since the rebrand, which is good. Which we actually discovered because I then had to go and rebuild it. So, cat girls. Nyan.
Oh, I got asked if I was going to bring my cat ear headband and tail in today from one of my costumes.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh yeah, I should. And then I completely forgot about it until just now. And that would have been perfect.
No.
It would have been. How dare you?
I let the team down.
Yeah, you really did. You could have just not told us and we wouldn't be giving you grief anymore.
I earned my mistakes.
Fair enough. All right. So the reason we're talking about cat girls, you may have seen a show this season. You may have seen several shows this season.
Yeah.
One of them is the Chainsmoking Cat, and the other one,
Black Torch.
There are cat girls in at least two shows,
he's a cat boy.
Well, look,
cat folk.
Well, hang on, I've got the technical term. It's a kimono mimi, a form of anthropomorphism where moe qualities are given to non-human beings. The word translates literally as animal ears. So there you go. Now you know.
Yeah.
Cool. That's it. On to the next thing. No.
Neko mimi or Usagi mimi or Inu mimi.
Yeah. And that's specifically for female characters with female traits, feline traits, such as obviously Neko mimi, cat ears, tail, and other feline characters on an otherwise human body. So we've got a second little bonus for Patreons about kind of the, I guess you could say, the history that relates to where the cats came from, but we'll give you a brief overview here. The genesis of the cat girl comes from the Edo and Showa period stories of shape-shifting yokai, such as the Bakaneko and the Nekomata. And these cat traits were often used to signal their role as a villain in the audience because they were kind of like mysterious and supernatural, if
and
you will.
Aloof, and yeah, not as friendly as dogs.
Yeah. So the cat traits kind of changed following World War II, and media representations moved the interpretation towards a more submissive moe character style. And that's obviously appeared in anime, manga, game, theater, and stuff like that. But yeah, it's kind of funny to see like something that was treated as a villainous yokai, and that, you know, then translate into something completely different and, shall we say, questionable for some.
I can totally break it down for you very easily.
Please do.
Because if you're familiar with cats.
Yes.
Girl cats are very rude and will stab you in the face.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will.
Boy cats are very loving and doting. Mm-hmm. So previously, they dealt with girl cats, and then they found out about boy cats.
that's your explanation?
Yes, that's my explanation.
Okay. That's where it comes from. Okay, then we'll go with Aaron's. So there you have it.
End of the episode. Catch you next time.
But yeah, look, the term, at least, that comes from Nekomusume, or literally translates as cat girl, comes from an 18th century misumono, which is kind of like a theater production during that period, in which a cat-woman hybrid was displayed. That's the first kind of media appearance, if you will, of like someone with a humanoid body with cat elements to it, as opposed to like being furred and more kind of like a hybrid. And that kind of then led to, you know, others adapting that in their stories. A lot of street performers were using it and stuff. So cats being yokai in literature dates all the way back to the Kamakura period, 1185 to 1333. The Bakaneko, which is a changed cat, is a type of Japanese yokai, which saw stories of them shape-shifting into prostitutes during the Edo period. This is apparently to do with the mysterious air that cats possess, leading to their association with the mysterious women of the night of the Red Light District, because they flitted through the night and disappeared. So, yeah, very interesting sort of thing. They were not associated with them before the Edo period. And if you want to know about some of the stories about why you don't want to meet a Bakaneko prior to the Edo period, jump on the Patreon, because we've got a good 10-minute breakdown of where that comes from. But, yeah, there's the Nekomata, which is a two-tailed cat yokai, and then there is the Bakaneko. And both of them have this tale of that when they reach a certain age, they kind of evolve, a cat evolves into one of these forms depending on, you know, the environment they've grown up in and lived in and the way they've been treated by humans.
You got Pokemon cats.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's Back in Echo, stories are kind of more about revenge and being treated poorly, whereas the Nekomata kind of goes either way, and there's also like the mountain version and the city version, all these other things. The important thing here is that those various abilities kind of then shifted into the shape-shifting part, and then that became a story element that was used in traditional kabuki theater. That, you know, a villainous spirit that was often treated as a Bakuneko coming for revenge against the character, or, you know, that would take revenge on their behalf across a villain. So it's really kind of a bit dark, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we shared some of that sort of some of those tales in that Patreon, if that's up your alley. Well, I did. Yeah, I did all the research. So yeah, look, you wanted more info. I gave more info. So let's go back to Catgirl history, however. So
can we make that a permanent section of the show, Catgirl history?
So back to that anyway. Yukio-e artist Utagawa Kuniyoshi. They created many woodblock prints focused on cats in human forms, always retaining the cat ears. And that kind of started in like the 1820s. And from there, that's where they believe like the modern interpretation of the human with the cat ears kind of evolved from, if you will. And he created several prints depicting a kabuki actor as the Nekozuka they were performing in as a play, which is a transformed human cat hybrid. But yeah, there's pictures of these online. I'll put a link in the video description if you're an audio listener, because we'll put them on screen for the video. But yeah, it's fascinating. And this is kind of like then led to the end of, you know, the World War II, and then a kind of change in the way media was looked at that then led to like the softening of the idea of these things, because more respect was being shown to the land. You know, I guess it just was kind of a cultural shift over that time. And it did it, you know, cat girls, and the first example of a beautiful cat girl actually appeared pre-war in pre-World War II, I should say, in 1924. The work was called The Fourth of Narcissus Month. It's a book, but they were the villain. However, they were not made ugly. They were beautiful now. They were captivating. And that was the kind of the inflection point. And then they had like, you know, anime and manga kind of changing that. Like Princess Knight is believed to be the first anime or manga to feature cat girls, which was in 1953.
Dang.
Yeah. And
haven't even had cat girls for 100 years.
Well, guess who wrote it? Osamu Tezuka.
Good old Astro Boy.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, there's plenty of like kind of examples over history, but it's been like past decade, cat girls have kind of gone out of vogue.
Yeah, like they kind of dipped for a spell.
Yeah. Mm. So it's a shame to see less of them, but then they seem to be making a comeback now. But I mean, look, based on Chainsmoking Cat, I don't know if moe is the element anymore.
From what I've seen of it, definitely not.
So, look, I've talked a lot, obviously. Tifa, you went and did some digging, and there's a series that you love anyway already, which was apparently means it wasn't very hard for you to dig, that is Catgirl-centric. So please, tell us about Tokyo Mew 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 Mew.
Yeah, Tokyo Mew Mew was a series that was actually played on television in Australia in the 2010s. Huh.
Was it that late?
And yeah, it was end of the 2000s and early 2010s.
Ah, okay. And this is kind
show
of like...
The show started early 2000s, mm-hmm. but it was mainly played in Australia during like that time, basically.
Mm. Oh, during generally that delayed a translation, etc.
Also, yeah. Australia gets everything like way late.
Yes. Mm. and basically, we see the main character, Ichigo, who, believe it or not, is very, very pink, like a strawberry.
Wow, really?
Tell us about her soul reaper abilities.
I think, like, during an earthquake or something like that, she comes into contact with a cat, and then after this, like, earthquake, her and four other students end up kind of, like, merging with these animals that they came into contact with. And they end up forming, like, a girl group, kind of like Sailor Moon, where they're, like, fight crime and things like that, except they're all animals. And so Ichigo is a cat and she is the lead, but then you have like a wolf and a lorikeet and like all these other animals, a monkey, I think one's a monkey. And it's just like really cute, and it was popular enough to get a remake in like 2019 as well. But that
was Tokyo Mew, yeah. Mew, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. So the original is just Tokyo Mew Mew, and then the new one's Tokyo Mew Mew New.
Well, it's Mew Mew New. Like two Mews and a new.
So Mew 2 New.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mew, so Mew 3.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sure,
why not?
All my OCs from Pokemon.
Oh, God. But, like, I guess, like, as you said, they merge with the creatures in this. Is there kind of like a supernatural connection to these animals, or are they just normal animals? Are they yokai or spirit beasts or something like that?
I think they were just, like, normal animals, but there was, I'm trying to remember correctly, I think it was just, like, a supernatural event that happened. Because, like, all of them, except for the girl that merges with a wolf, I'm pretty sure that one was a little more convoluted than the other ones.
Oh.
Because these were just, like, animals that you would generally find around for the most part. So
I'm just having a look at the anime synopsis, and apparently there's some researchers who inject people with DNA as well.
Yeah, there's, like, so the English dub
changed a lot.
And it does change a bit of like what's going on and stuff. And I don't think the researcher stuff we find out later on in the series as well. Mm. So in the beginning, you're just like, oh, okay, interesting. But yeah, I feel like a lot of the sort of cat girl and cat boy phenomenon was like the early 2000s. Or just the 2000s in general. And people say that in literature and media, we have a 20-year cycle. So, like,
true.
If something was popular in 2006, 20 years later is 2026. If you do some element that's similar, then it will become popular again. And we're also seeing that with, like, like other books, for example, with all of these like fantasy YA novels becoming popular,
what?
And that was like popular then as well, things like that.
There's
so
definitely like
kind of
a nostalgia cycle, which then brings things back into the main discussion and pop culture area.
Yep.
So yeah, that would make sense. I do wonder if this is the resurgence of cat girls.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because like I think Tokyo Mew Mew was almost like resurgence to the girl group fighting sort of thing that we got with like Sailor Moon as well. So this was kind of like doing a version of that, but slightly different. And then now we're taking on like the cat girl element. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. Cause you watched, this growing up, didn't you?
Yeah.
Obviously, Shoujo, in case you hadn't picked up on that one.
Shoujo.
But let's kind of go like to the other end of the strange scale. Aaron,
yes.
What did you watch?
Aaron watched Cat Planet Cuties.
Cat Planet Cuties. Why do I know this?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. What were you doing in 2010, Kyle?
I was watching anime seasonally.
You might have been watching this as it came out.
This... I'm trying to figure out, is this the same season that a certain other one came out? Because there was this time where there was a website which would list what was coming out in the new season in a single line. So they would literally give you a quick synopsis of what this show is. So Saki, the one with the girls, Mahjong Club, it was just it was literally written as lesbians playing Mahjong. And that it was like bang on the
Beautiful.
Nose. And whoever was Perfect. Writing these was so on the nose with everything they did. And I feel like I saw Cat Planet Cuties appear in that. And it was something like cat girls go to space and fight in a war.
No. Well, I mean, cat girls come from space. And they accidentally enter a war that they're not aware of.
Well, look, I was close. Like, this is like, 16 years ago that I would have read the line, so...
Yeah. So basically, cat girl comes to Earth to try and experience their culture and see what it's like. And she gets greeted by this guy who's really nice to her. And she's like, oh, humans are nice. And then it turns out that his three closest female friends that are also interested in him are all working for government secret agencies. Separate ones.
Oh, no.
And when they discover that she's a cat girl alien, One of them's like, oh no, aliens are weirder than that. We can't let this be humanity's first experience. Another one's like, it's an alien, kill it. Another one's like, we need to study these and understand their technology. And so all three of them are trying to capture her and take her to a secret base. One of them manages to do it. And he's like, hey, yeah, I saw that was you. I saw your watch. I recognize it from that time we were hanging out. So where'd you take her? And she's like, no, that wasn't me. And he's like, okay, you can stop messing around. Where did you take her? And she's like, oh, here. And he's like, cool, we're going now. By the way, I'm calling the other two, and they're going to join us. And then they go and get her back from the base. And she's like, oh my God, I'm so thankful. And then these girls lose their government jobs because they've gone against the government for this one guy.
This is listed as a harem. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, the four girls are a harem. Yeah,
I was going to say, it definitely has the harem vibe based on what you're saying.
Yep.
It's also got an R+ rating for mild nudity.
There is very mild nudity.
At least it's not violence or other stuff.
Yeah, no, there's no violence.
Yep. Oh. Well, that's good. There we go. Okay. Comedy, romance, sci-fi, ecchi based on a light novel. Someone really, if it's based on a light novel, someone clearly had a vision.
Well, so they find out that dog aliens have been living on Earth for a long time.
As and dogs?
No.
Okay.
They're like the cat girls, but they're dog girls.
Of course.
So when they find out that the cat girls land, turns out they were the ones controlling all the government organizations to try and capture the cat girls. Because they hate cat girls.
Wow.
Oh my God,
and, like,
that's
there's
so
this
funny.
Huge galactic like council, and the dogs got kicked out of it because they were too aggressive. So they hit on Earth, and their leader is, do you remember Wacky Races?
Yeah.
And Snidely Whiplash and his little assistant, Muttley.
Yeah.
Okay, they've got a carbon copy of Muttley.
It does look
like
it.
Does the same laugh, looks the same. I want you to take a guess as to what this dog's name is. This is a Japanese production and he is a carbon copy of Muttley. Please.
I'm trying to think of like what that would translate to in Japanese.
You don't even have to try to translate it.
Mutto? No.
You got half of it.
Is it Muttley?
Muttry.
Of course it is. Of course it is. They didn't even try with that. Oh my God. Well, that's killed Aaron.
When I found out, I stopped the episode and I went, I can't have heard that right. I went back and I was like, no, they said that. Maybe it's once off. And they call him that again later and I'm like, no. Oh. And I'm in my office working.
Hardly working.
So I can't laugh as much as I'd like to. But that got out of me in the office.
Jesus. All right. Fair enough. Having had a look at it, interestingly, the light novel started in 2003.
Oh, wow.
So again, going back to that 20-year thing, it didn't finish till 2015. However, and that adaptation came out in 2010, but...
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure they've done a bunch of spin-offs for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, surprising kind of no one, like, the adaptation is not very well received. It's on a 6.5 with 96,000 votes on my anime list. However, during that time, cat girls weren't really in vogue, were they? Like, at that point, it kind of became the joke of putting the cat ears on the person and making them uncomfortable in anime.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if it's like, as Tifa says, like that 20-year cycle, maybe it started in about 2008, 2009, because obviously for Western culture, at least, when we started getting those shows, so maybe we're looking like end of, like the next couple of years, an influx of cat girl animes and cat boys. So, yeah.
I mean, we're already starting to see it trickle in.
We are. Mm. That was produced by AIC Plus Studios, who, having had a look at their list, there's a lot of cat girls in it. And I do wonder if they are a cat girl studio, such as Nekogomi Yaoyoruzu Orphanage.
I love the idea of an anime studio dedicated purely to cat girl animes.
Yeah, it's the cat god OVA, this, apparently.
I love that.
Oh.
I want to buy socks in this company.
Oh, okay. So Nekogami Yayoruzu is the Everyday Tales of a Cat God. Guess what year it ran in? 2011. Mm. So, yeah, I think Tifa has hit the nail on the head. The cat girls are coming back, and it is the 20-year cycle. The manga ran from 2007 to 2012. Yeah, I mean, like, they've never really gone away, but it's very clear that there's an interest in them returning now. And I do wonder how that is going to impact ARM conventions.
So
buy stocks in cat ears and cattails. Start selling them at every convention. You will make bank.
Yes, do it now. As you are probably aware, because we mentioned it, the reason we have gone to this is the two shows this season that have cat girls characters in them.
Cat people.
And there are plenty of other shows that feature cat girls that we can obviously talk about, but I think we've actually covered most of them. Like, I'm pretty sure we've already done an episode on Violent Cat Girl, Pink Hair. She's not technically a cat girl, but
Elfenlead?
Elfenlead, because she's got the cat ears. We've done an episode on that already, I'm pretty sure, or at least a special. There's a few other ones as well that were around the time of kind of like Lucky Star and Azumanga Daioh that had cat girls as the main leads as well, in that kind of sort of silly cute girl doing cute things, but let's make them a cat girl sort of setup.
So they've got like that innocence and silliness of a cat.
Yeah. However, this season's Chainsmoker... cat girl. So Yanni Neko is airing at the moment, and we did mention this in the promo, and this was one of Tifa's one, and it's rated R, 17 plus, for violence and profanity, and it focuses on Yanni, a cat girl with a seriously bad smoking habit. It's pretty grotty. I want to say it's a bit.
I feel grotty. It is, but it is really understatement.
Funny.
It's really funny, but it's also like the characters are slob, and it's kind of like disgusting slobbery. Like,
yeah, they don't sugarcoat it. It's straight up slob.
The interesting thing about this, and Tifa, I think you might have actually been the one who sent this through to the chat, is that the story is. It's written from a point of view. While it is a comedy, it is sharing the struggles of something that Japan doesn't talk about, poverty and addiction, because they don't want to admit that it is an issue. And this is a prime example showcasing the challenges of people in that environment, the psychological impact of it. But the message is getting through, even though it's a comedy, which is really nice to see. But yeah, I mean, we couldn't chat to you, Tifa, about it during the show. The season preview because you were sick. So what kind? Yeah. Obviously, aside from the opening being literally a scene from just scene after scene of films with people smoking in disgusting environments, what attracted you to this?
Well, I mean, okay, so take the concept of like Spy X Family, for example, where everyone's like, "Oh, this is clearly made to get Japanese people to have kids," and we keep seeing like all these shows that are kind of similar. So this kind of does give the vibe of like, hey, we don't talk about like smoking is cheap in Japan. Like it's really cheap, and we don't talk about the kind of problems that are associated with that and how someone who is a chain smoker would potentially live their life and things like that. And I think there's something, I don't know, there's something about things that are a bit gross that I like, but also there are some really funny moments in a way, because this is someone who is a chain smoker, but just mention of drugs here.
Yeah.
like, they don't really seem to be someone that's, like, into, like, smoking weed or, like, that kind of stuff, and it's just, I don't know, it's interesting to see where people's compartmentalization of what they will do and what they won't do, even if that leads to kind of like a disgusting lifestyle is as well.
Yeah.
I really loved, there's a scene with her neighbor where she's like, "Oh, you have a smoke. I don't have any smokes. I'm out of smokes. Can I have this smoke?" And she's like, it's not a cigarette. And then she takes it and she's like, it's catnip. that's rolled up. And she's just like, oh, and she's like freaking out and stuff like that. And it's just like kind of, it's really funny, but it's just, it's interesting how they can kind of like tie that in with the idea of cats, because they're clearly using that as part of their like writing techniques, not just, oh, they just happen to be a cat girl. Like the usage of catnip is kind of funny in comparison to these other things. But also just seeing someone live their life in a way that's kind of like, It's like a slice of life, but the opposite of a slice of life, in a way.
A slice of filth.
Yeah.
Like it is designed to make you uncomfortable. Like,
yeah.
Well,
which I kind of like that. Yeah. So.
She also has a neighbor that looks like me when I shave.
The guy. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's just for clarification, the series doesn't only feature cat girls. There are humans in this as well, but cat girls are just a normal part of the world. So,
yeah.
It's Elon Musk's ideal world.
I told you not to say that. Anyway.
Can't stop the truth.
No, you don't want to bring that horrible person into the conversation. So, though, if it's any good news, he's lost a heap of money in the past few weeks because all of his stock's been overvalued and it's crashing and it's really funny.
Well, also, only an insane person would actually start working on that project. So it's more making fun of him for thinking that he's capable of doing such a thing.
He's not capable of doing anything. Exactly. He's capable of investing money into people to do it. So anyway, without getting any further into the politics, look, the people who make the rockets at SpaceX, wonderful people, really intelligent.
The people who fund it?
Yeah, not so much. But anyway, so obviously that is the chain smoking smoker cat, and as Aaron rightly pointed out, there is then Black Torch, which is this season's sort of shonen
action. It's your new sort of Bleach sort of, oh, hey, look, there's this person and we merge together and we get more powerful and look, it's my new state. And oh, look, now there's an organization trying to recruit me for what I do.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that I've just remembered one of the shows that would also have been around 2010, which was Shugo Chara. Again,
I was remembering that when people were saying Tokyo Mew Mew.
Because obviously the guy in that who transforms into like a cat boy. And there's other people who are cat people as well. And
with like crazy big eyes.
Original run 2005 to 2010 for the manga. Mm-hmm. Anime 2007 to 2008 with then obviously the spin-offs which came in the years following, finishing up in about 2011. So yeah, like it's, yeah, okay, yeah. Tifa is the genius that we all deserve. Yeah. I mean, well done.
Even like Cat Boys, not that anyone, I expect anyone to have seen this or wants to discuss this. Loveless also is all Cat Boys, and that is of the time.
Look, I think Aaron's seen it, but I am aware of it. Because I think your former partner, like from a few years ago, was really into it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then
it's not great.
No.
It's very controversial as well. But I'm telling you, that was like the main sort of, I guess, thing that was happening with like this cat boy, cat girl sort of animes and mangas at the time.
I think as well, if you have a look at like ReZero, because obviously we've got the cat boy in that. However,
Felix?
Yeah, Felix was introduced around 2010 in the light novels.
I love Felix the cat.
So, yeah. Back to simpler times.
Oh, cat Felix. Boys, cat girls. Actually, is he technically a cat boy because he's a boy that got turned into a cat?
Oh.
Yeah?
Oh.
I don't know if that will... Did he die for it to happen?
No, I'm pretty sure it was a curse or a spell.
If it's a curse, then technically it does qualify because there are also tales of, Bakaneko cursing people.
Cool. This is now a Felix the Cat podcast.
Oh, no. Shouldn't have said anything, damn it. But anyway, back to Black Torch. Yeah, he merges with a cat and has...
It's like this spiritual cat with like superpowers. I think he's a monster cat.
Yeah, it's probably a Bakaneko.
Yeah, it's probably a Bakaneko. And so, yeah, he merges with them and he gets cool fighting powers and he has to fight off monsters and the government agency recruits him for the like secret espionage stuff. I talked about it in the season preview.
Literally last episode. Yeah. You can go find out more.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys don't want to hear more about the same thing again.
But yeah, look, if you want more Catboy, Catgirl anime, there are many lists online.
And go to your local Catboy, Catgirl cafe.
Is that a thing?
In Japan,
it is in Japan, but I mean outside of Japan.
I mean, sometimes I'll host those events.
Yeah, actually, yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, we've seen a few of them. And then we've also got Neko Nation here, which was last night.
Oh, and that's something I forgot to mention. There is, because of the Catboy, Catgirl ideas to do with all that, there is actually a convention in the US called NekoCon.
Oh.
So this is a little spin-off of that, But my favorite thing that the Catboy Catgirl thing has brought into like their little pocket thing is, if you choose to not identify with either the gender, they call you non-binary.
Oh, my God. I was going to
say, that's pretty funny.
I do have a note here about how, like, furry or not. So cat girl, whether it's categorized as furry or a person who appreciates cats girls is considered a kimono in Japan, is hotly controversial among fans who don't wish to be associated with either group. Kimono is people who are fond of anthropomorphic animal characters as opposed to necessarily furries. So it's not about the fur. It's kind of like they think Lola Bunny is cool.
See, I would have gone for Gidget from, Mouse Tales?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, like Rogue the Bat from Sonic, Rogue, for instance. Bat. Like, yeah. She's considered in the kimono area, even though technically she...
Well, she's definitely more human than bat.
Exactly. And there's that balance. And we know this about the furry community. Like, there is a lot of discussion on where the line is, and it's very personal.
Well, yeah. Like, there's like several subcategories, but like there's the ferals, which are just like... Oh, yeah, my fursona is just a straight wolf. It's just a wolf. And it's not even a bipedal wolf. It's a wolf.
Yeah.
And it's like, cool. You need to check into a mental hospital.
Well, it's better than identifying as Nyan, you know, like, which we've seen, which was a really weird sort of thing with gender identity and all that, but sure.
We support you in your gender identity.
Just, like, kind of consider, in a business sense, where that's going to put you, if you go into like a business and you say my pronouns are Nyan and Yen, which is,
that's kind of funny though, I'm not
it's
gonna kind lie.
I want to start putting that on my corporate emails.
It's kind of funny, but it's also like in a corporate environment, like, look out for yourself, protect your interests if they could have negative impact on you. We want you guys to have a fun life and be able to do all the things that you're doing. And, you know, that unfortunately does mean at the moment, at least censoring ourselves a little bit until all the boomers go. So.
Hear that? Straight from Kyle's mouth. Kill all the boomers. Wi-Fi radio.
No. You know what? I kind of want to put that in the promo. So dumb. Back to NekoCon, that started in 1998 and it's been going to today. This is in Virginia in the US. It's the Virginia's oldest anime conventions. There you go.
Wow.
And I also have some like moe explanations for you from like philosophers, and I'm not even kidding. So according to, there is a Japanese magazine that looks at culture, fashion, all these things called Da Vinci. And they ran an article in 2013 about catgirls, and it was an analysis done of it, talking about how the docile image created by cat ears stimulates the viewer's desire to protect a cute animal. And that facilitated the switch from villain to moe, if that makes sense. So cat ears are generally accessible and easy to add to a character or costume, making it easy for people to jump on board with.
Oh, especially if you're drawing it. It's two little triangles. Done.
Exactly. And then it further increased the accessibility and popularity of the cat trope because it was easy for people to do that for conventions and meetups so that they felt like they were part of the community even if they were just starting out. Similar, and you know, it didn't have some of the stigma bunny ears and bunny girl outfits have attached to it. So yeah, kind of helped make it a common trope, if that makes sense. But yeah, and then there's a quote from a Japanese philosopher called Hiroki Azuma. He stated that catgirl characteristics such as cat ears and feline speech patterns are core elements of the moe concept. And that term kind of appeared at the same time as the catgirl idea, if that makes sense, as far as like in the anime pop culture, like otaku zeitgeist.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that even like Japanese philosophers are weighing in on cat girls. Like, what?
Look, if anyone's qualified to do that...
It's a Japanese philosopher.
Yeah. Like, if you told me some Arabian philosopher was like, cat girls, I'd be like, okay, buddy, hold on.
But if they were Egyptian, maybe Egyptian, something interesting there.
Egyptian could have it. Yeah. But I'm just sitting there imagining like one of the old Greek philosophers or the old Roman philosophers, and they're like...
Cat girls are what an example of how our society has degraded with the introduction of all of these other countries to our great empire.
Testicules, I think you had a bit too much of the wine.
Oh, no.
But yeah, look, so it's kind of funny that this is something that has become so broad and well-known in Japanese society, and then obviously with, you know, the exposure of anime to the world has further increased and expanded the exposure that people know about it. And we obviously see, like, you know, in comics and that, we have, you know, that anthropomorphization that obviously has been around for a long time. But when you have characters who have just small elements of it, like, what was it, the something Mimi?
Oh, Neko Mimi?
Yeah, Neko Mimi and Kimono Mimi.
Kimono Mimi, yeah.
So Kimono Mimi as a context, yeah, that originated in Japan. And that, before that, people would say it's like a werewolf. You know, it's that hybridization where there is fur, they are more animalistic, whereas Japan's take eventually became they have those animal highlights, if you would, as opposed to, you know, being fully thing. It's a fascinating, you know, kind of deep dive. I wasn't expecting this to be this interesting, and then I literally was like reading all of these like old folk tales from Japan last night until about 2 a.m. So I was like, this is fascinating stuff.
So the concept of a throwaway episode idea of Tifa just be like, what if we just do cat girls, and us be like, yeah, okay, turned into like this massive thing where Kyle's like, I love cat girls.
No, I appreciate the origin and the continuation of how it's become a...
The history of cat girls.
Yeah, how it's become a historical part of our cultural fabric, if you will. I'm not a furry!
Kawaii-Fi Radio. Tonight on Anime Communique.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Nothing brings ratings up like a little controversy.
So yeah, on the note of furries, you seen the new Pals in Pal World?
Sick it. Slide me up. It's Uncle from Animal Crossing. I'm back, baby.
I have a theory.
Oh my god.
So I have a theory as to why this has happened. So this is not... I mean, this isn't going to be controversial, but it is kind of part of the news because Powerwall had its 1.0 release. It's had the highest numbers since there. It's a Japanese company who's technically competing with Pokemon for the attention in the monster catching genre. The reason we're talking about this is very simple. They announced 2 years ago as a joke a Powerwall dating sim. They didn't have enough female pals to fill the roster, and that's why there's a whole heap of female versions of new pals. That's my theory.
Oh.
Because they then the next April Fool said, you know what? We're doing it, and we will confirm this again tomorrow on the 2nd of April, just so you know it's real. So that, I believe, is why we have had a sudden influx of female pals in Power World.
Well, I know who I'm choosing then.
The
Second.
Yeah. I like the panda girl. There's a kind of a... Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, it reminds me of a character from a cartoon that I saw as a kid. And
it kind of reminds me of, is it Mei Ling from Full Metal Alchemist?
Yeah, yeah. Well, her, but like...
A little grown up.
Yeah, I think it's basically Chun-Li.
More like Sakura from Street Fighter.
Yeah, yeah, but that sort of concept. Fighter, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, like, it's kind of funny because now, because it's been so big, everyone's like talking about it, and apparently there may be a Power World anime in the works.
Well, they just released the Power World TCG.
They have a trading card game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tifa, have you got the cards?
No, it's a pre-order. It's not out.
Also,
out yet.
Trading cards in this economy.
I was going to say, yeah. I was talking to Aaron about this, and it's like, I think now is the time to sell my Pokemon collection from the first gen. Because I've still got it after like 20-odd years. So.
Well, Tifa just sent me a video about the Naruto TCG, and I went, I would love to. I love Naruto, but in this economy.
You're like, I would love to, but I need to refinance my house, and I don't have that yet.
Yeah, I'm refinancing my future house.
In advance.
Yeah.
But look, we'll go on to something controversial, because we always have to as part of this, but we figured...
Kyle's a furry.
Yeah, apparently I'm a furry now.
The more you know.
Look, I think... we're into a very interesting time in the anime world and community. There's been a major push against AI in Japan, and we've had a major push against foreign influences impacting the art created in Japan. And we've even had voice actors come out and say, like, the way voice actors were treated back in the day was horrible. It's better now, but at the cost of having more exposure to foreign investment and foreign influences on the actual creative process and the content that's produced. And this kind of then comes down to a creator we need to talk about who has put his current manga series on hold because he hopes the industry will lift the AI ban. This is the creator of Goodnight Pun Pun. He also created Dead Dead Demon Dead of Destruction. His name is Inio Asana, and he has apparently said that he is putting Mugina Into the Deep on hiatus because of restrictions to generative AI within the manga industry. Now, there's a lot of context around this. He's being silly. However, the context will help you understand what's going on in the manga industry at the moment. So he was talking on a Japanese talk show called Weekly Ochaya, and he explained that his production process relies heavily on 3D modeling in software like Blender and Unreal Engine to make those backgrounds, which they then trace over to then correctly get the angle and stuff like that. He personally builds over 90% of the manga's environments before writing any plot, and he mentions his approach to building it like a video game like Grand Theft Auto. And he wants to then obviously speed that up using generative AI, but publishers forbid professional artists using it due to copyright concerns, which is the right approach, just to be clear. Like, the biggest issue at the moment with generative AI, we'll not go on another AI rant, I'll do that another time, but the biggest issue with generative
AI... Sign up to the Patreon for AI rants.
Yeah. The biggest issue with generative AI is that nothing has been paid for the people it's been taken off of, and it's putting them out of work. And that goes for music, it goes for graphics, it goes for animation, it goes for a lot of different areas that are creative and low paid to begin with, and these are not the roles you should be replacing with AI. Now, sure, that could dramatically speed up the process, but Tifa, how do backgrounds come about in manga?
Well, like you said, he does use like Blender, things like that, computer, like animation sort of stuff, but usually you have very particular like background artists that literally just specialize in creating your background art. And, you know, he has done so many different works as well, so it's unlikely that he doesn't have manga assistants. Mm-hmm. And usually, so a mangaka comes up because they were a manga assistant originally, they do good work, they get the connections to like Shonen Jump, for example, or other larger publishers, and then they can publish through there because the author they were originally working with already works with that publishing company. That's just generally how it's done. And like, even if he's doing, he says he's doing these backgrounds himself, I don't understand why he wouldn't get an assistant, which would be a lot easier as well on him instead of having to do everything. But it is a very fundamental part of the study as a mangaka as well, because it gives you like that, it's kind of like when you're an apprentice basically and you learn like what the deadlines are, how to do all these things and the kind of softwares that you use, because when you're studying as well and you're doing your own main works, it is very different to study in university versus to be in an actual environment of another mangaka and learn under them. And so like, even like big authors like the author of Jujutsu Kaisen, for example, was previously a manga assistant. Most people are manga assistants initially, so it just takes away like a really key part to the industry that allows people to work upwards. And in Japan, they're very like, they really want people to start at the bottom and go up. Yeah. It's the same with the voice acting. You study, you get to go to an agency, you start at the bottom and then you work your way up.
Build your profile.
It's not like in America where you kind of can be plucked off the street sometimes, or in like other Western cultures as well, where it's like, oh, you've done a bunch of art, you have this really good portfolio, maybe we can use them and stuff like that. They really want, if you don't have that resume of experience to back it up, sometimes they just won't hire you.
It's interesting as well, because like if you have a look at any manga series that focuses on the creative process of manga, so i.e. manga about manga, if you will, a lot of them talk about how they will get their assistant in to do the backgrounds for them while they're drawing the main stuff, and then they'll layer that over it, and then that goes off to the publisher, sort of thing. And you know, a lot of them, it is tracing real world locations, just to be clear. Like a lot of manga that's set in real world locations do use real world locations. That's why they go location scouting, and that's why people can go on pilgrimages for those manga, because they are based on real worlds. They'll go take the photo themselves, trace it and modify it to fit their setting, and then go from there. And his idea is like, for example, going back to Asano, so he traces real-world locations such as Shimokitazawa to construct authentic city layouts before the story is written around them, and that workflow shifted the series from a grounded story about a middle-aged man to a high-octane parkour and action manga as far as Mujino of the Deep. But he said that AI could speed up that process, but publishers currently forbid artists from using it. You're not allowed to use it precisely because you're a professional, he says. Now, as Tifa's rightly pointed out, he does have manga assistants. He is signed to a major label. He doesn't need to be doing this. This is a choice by him. And he's saying that, you know, he shouldn't be, you know, continuing to grind through 3D modeling. He should be using generative AI to generate it based on his existing models. But the problem is it won't generate it off the existing models. It'll generate off the existing models and all of the copyrighted works that it's stolen before that. Yeah, he thinks that AI is suited for creating viral algorithm-friendly content and human creators should instead focus on niche resonant stories. And it's like, so you're saying that, and this is the thing, resonant stories AI cannot authentically replicate. It's like, mate, you're just immediately saying that your story can be replicated. If you're saying you want to replace it with AI, you're putting yourself in that point saying that your story is not, will not resonate with people. And it's a very niche story. Like, it's basically like, what if Epstein had an island and everyone agreed to it? That's essentially what the story is. And then people give away their human rights so that they can, you know, be outside of the law and operate as assassins. But that then means, of course, they are not protected by laws. So then, you know, bad things happen. And they, you know, there's all the whole criminal thing of, you know, putting people on substances to then sign away their rights and stuff like that. So, like, it's a very niche story. It is not going to resonate with many people. It's very sign and focused. If you go to AI in that, your audience, who are the 18 plus, like the older viewers, are not going to resonate with it because there's already the pushback of that. And the people who do like AI tend to be, I want to say, 60 and 50 plus age bracket at the moment. Everyone under that.
Or there's super, I feel like there's a very specific type of like 20-year-old that is super into AI as well. And I do wonder, though, based on the description of his most recent manga, if he wants to potentially target that audience by making a statement like this as almost like a marketing ploy in some sort of sense as well. Because it just seems like a really odd thing to say kind of out of the blue on an interview as well.
Well, I mean, the manga's on hiatus on purpose before returning in 2027. Yes. And he has then said that this has caused him to stop work because that means he's been using generative AI and has been found out. And I think this is why he's brought it up, to try and get the people online to kind of back him. But the thing is that especially in Japan, there is quite a pushback against it. Japan is very slow to take on change. And I'm surprised they've been this slow about AI. I thought they'd be, you know, all for it straight away, just like they were with crypto and NFTs. But it seems like it's not as cut and dry because it's impacting people there already.
The opposite, like in Korea, it's really interesting how AI is everywhere. Everything is AI in Korea. You will see it in every advertising, billboard, anything. It's insane.
Yeah. So it's kind of wild. We've got the other end of it as well with Square Enix. This was in April. Its editors spend more than 3,000 hours a year on one of manga's most time-consuming tasks, and they want to use AI to cut that down. And this was for typesetting specifications specifically. That, I mean, like, it's not that hard, and you'll probably spend the same amount of time trying to get the AI to do that properly. So, like, yeah, you know, the process of assigning a font, a style, and placement of every line of dialogue. But it's not really that time consuming compared to trying to then do that page by page using AI and then having to check it and then correct it and regenerate it. It's a waste of electricity and time to do that when you can do it yourself. And it's like, this is the same sort of thing of people using like AI to summarize emails. And it's like, well, then don't ask for a list of stuff. Like, you know, if you don't want it, don't bother. And there are already tools in place that allow people to do it. All this is going to do is just tell them where the box is. And then they put the text in. It's like, but if you already have the thing in front of you, you can see exactly where that text box is. So
it's not hard to do.
No, it's literally, they don't need it. They don't need AI. They just need to update the software that they've been using since 2005.
Yeah,
that's what it comes to. So like, yeah, there's kind of all these things where they're just like with this, it's a solution in want of a problem. And that's kind of where this story is kind of heading. He's like, he doesn't want to do the backgrounds anymore, but clearly he doesn't trust someone else to do it for him. So he wants to use a machine which he can then tell control, what to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, or if you brought on a, you know, an actual young up and coming, you know, manga artist, they could probably learn your style from you, just like what we saw with happen with Berserk, where the two understudies took over when he passed on. Mm. Like, but he doesn't want that, clearly. So I don't know what the go is with him, but it's really disappointing to hear this because I was enjoying the manga. It's not for everyone, but I've enjoyed some of his other works. But to know that he's this pro AI, it makes me wonder, like, well, how much of this has come from just regurgitating other people's ideas? And that's disappointing to hear.
And especially, like, Goodnight Pun Pun is, like, pretty acclaimed as well. Yeah. So
I mean, the good news is that was before AI kind of came into the scene, but it makes you wonder if there were other shortcuts he was potentially taking prior to this. Mm. So moving on, let's get on to some, you know, more interesting news items that are not making us all feel sad. Blue Box Manga by Koji Miura has ended on its 250th chapter. The final volume will ship in December this year. And this is this went to Netflix a couple of seasons back, and it's coming back shortly. It is from Weekly Shonen Jump, and it is about a boy who's on the badminton team who admires his senpai who is in the basketball team above him. One spring day, their relationship takes a sharp turn because it turns out that their mothers both used to play on the basketball team together. Her family is moving overseas for work, and she wants to stay in Japan playing basketball because she's literally the team's ace and could go pro. She's living with him now.
and they were roommates.
And they were roommates. Well, housemates, not roommates. But yeah. It's really sweet, really well written. It kind of does a good balance of kind of like romance and sports anime. I've been reading it, and I finished it when it came out, and I kind of feel like there's got to be another chapter coming to kind of wrap up the post story, because the spot it ends in feels like it's, they weren't sure where to go from here, like, you know, what happens when they're both in university sort of thing. Or it's, I finished the story, I've told what I want to do, and I know, like, you kind of know what lies in their future for going forward. But it would be nice to, be, like, jump 10 years ahead and find out where everyone is, if that makes sense. Because, like, one of the girls in it is, like, an epic sort of rhythmic gymnast, and then she gets on the Olympic team and that sort of stuff. And you're like, wow, okay, I want to know what happens. Does she go off to win an Olympic gold medal or something like that? And these two have, you know, ended up getting together who, like, you would not have thought, does that last? And, yeah, all these little sort of story ideas that it feels like they haven't been answered. And we know Japan loves to do the... And then the story continued. you know, life continues. Like,
here's a bonus episode.
Yeah. So hopefully a bonus chapter in like a couple of months once they've had a breather. But if you want to read that, that is on Shueisha's Manga Plus service as well. 250 chapters. It's a very easy read, and it's not like 200 chapters until they get together sort of thing. It's like the process makes sense, and it feels real in like a logic sense. But like from experience of high school and from what I've heard about Japanese high schools, maybe not so much. That's a good one. We've mentioned this before, Milky Subway, the Galactic Limited Express anime. We are going to be doing an episode on that in the near future. This was created by, what was his name? they're more interested in listing the names of the voice actors and stuff like that. Kamiyama, he released the original one as his graduation project for Kadokawa's Vantan Game Academy CG Animator major. So, yeah, from memory, Kamiyama is from India originally. I will need to double check this because they're kind of like, Kamiyama doesn't sound like a very Indian surname. No. So maybe he's half Indian, half Japanese. I don't know. We'll need to look into this, but I did remember seeing that he was at an Indian university first and then was accepted into this animation program. And yeah, that short went absolutely viral, got like 7 million views. And then he went and was approached by Tokyo MX and they were like, can you make a series? And then he made a 12 episode series. And now they're like, can you do a special now that the movie's come off? So, yeah, we want to go and visit this. We'll let you know when that's in the works because we kind of want to see if we can maybe get hold of the guy. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, kind of get an idea of, you know, what did you watch that inspired you and led you to this? Because he uses a lot of, like, old Japanese music and, like, old Japanese references in it. So it's kind of cool. But yeah. And then in the last bit of lovely news, Sina Hoshiki. She's a voice actress. She was diagnosed with leukemia and stepped away from her studio as voice acting in voice acting in 2022 to focus on treatment and recovery. She is back this season and is the voice of Yamada in Smoking Behind the Supermarket with You. She is also in the kind of reincarnation story of I'm just quickly bringing it up. She was in Bocchi the Rock as like kind of additional things, but Needy Girl Overdose, which is coming up, and Hanari-san Still Wants to Fight in the Next Life, which is also this season. And it's basically a romantic comedy of the demon lord and the hero being reincarnated in this world after both of them dying. And she still wants to fight, but it turns out they have a lot in common. So, yeah, interesting to see, like, she's kind of landed two lead roles, if you will, in after her return, and then obviously Needy Girl Overdose, which is, I believe, what do we got that? Oh, no, sorry, that was in April, so she was already in that. Was she the lead character? I don't think she was the lead character. Well, this is her first lead since then, so there you go. So good news. You know, people do recover and come back, which is nice, especially, yeah. You know, young people. It's sad to hear because we're really concerned because we keep hearing these things about like manga artists passing away and we're like, they were really young. Is it the environment? Is something else going on?
I think it's the stress load with the deadlines and it's just not a conducive environment.
Yeah. But we hope that means that, you know, she will stay free of the leukemia and continue on, and we'll hopefully have her in more things as well going forward. Just hopefully not to the detriment of her health. So.
Well done, Hoshiki-san.
Yeah. There we go.
Yay.
a quick news blast for you because, yeah, there's not much else in the last few weeks as far as news has gone after Anime Expo ended. Like, all the big announcements happened during the Anime Expo promo. So, yeah, we've got, like, kind of limited information on, like, oh, this one's got a new trailer, or this one's got, like, the voice cast and ass, and, like, that's great, but I want something more.
Yeah, well, we get, like, that big condensed bit of news, and we're like, what do we even pull out of this? Mm-hmm. And then we get nothing. And then we get another big condensed bit of news, and then we're like,
I mean, we can also mention that the official casting call for the leads of the live-action Naruto Hollywood film has been launched by a global casting agency, and apparently it may be filming in the UK, according to the info we've got here, based on the team involved. For you were doing a bit of Googling on this. You were saying, like, the people involved in the background have been on, like, all sorts of live productions, haven't they?
Yeah, there's a few that have been in. They worked on the One Piece live action. Some of the producers, they're working on the Zelda live action.
That one worries me.
Some of them worked on Ghost in the Shell and Cowboy Bebop. So it's a bit of a mix there.
It could go either way, couldn't it?
Just see how that goes. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially with it being a global casting call. And yeah, we'll see if anyone we know ends up in it, or if there's anyone from, like, the voice acting groups and all that who we've ended up in contact with who end up going for it as well. Because Well, as Tifa will tell you, with both voice acting and acting, there's a lot of overlap now, so...
Well, I just I want to see the English dub voice actors in the background doing random stuff. Like, I want Maylee Flanagan to give Naruto a bowler almond and be like, "Oh, it's on the house, believe it."
God.
Or like Yuri Lowenthal gets his butt kicked by Itachi and he's like, "Curse you, Sasuke's brother. I will get you back." Somehow.
That feels very much like a fan film, and I don't really want that because that would really lower the...
Well, that's a little Kuribo line, so it's an abridged line.
Yeah, exactly.
Like... But, like, little homages here and there to the fans.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, like, but I think they need to be a bit more subtle.
So no Maylee Flanagan?
Look, Maylee Flanagan can be in there, but she can't say believe it.
Aww.
No. Come on.
Have you seen the He-Man movie?
No.
Yes.
They had the previous He-Man actor in there, and he did like a passing of really the torch scene to the new He-Man.
I mean, like, and a lot of shows do that. A lot of, like, you know, recreations do that now. I just think it needs to be something that is not cringe. Because Believe It's already pretty cringe to begin with.
Oh, Believe It is so cringe, but that's part of the charm, especially if they do younger Naruto, because that series was all cringe.
It would be really bad if, like, he only starts saying it after she says it to him.
No, she's going to say it and he's going to be like, "Who would ever say that?"
Oh, yeah. Okay, look, if it's done like that, then yes. Because it's like, ugh.
That feels very Marvel.
Yeah.
Nobody says that. No. Thanks, lady.
All right. It's like, cool. But yeah, look, that's the anime news for this fortnight. There is obviously plenty more. If you want to see what's kind of kicking around and what all these new series are that have announced kind of additional bits since Anime Expo, go check out Anime News Network's coverage of it. They've got all the information you'll need there. With that, we'll be back in a sec. Wi-Fi Radio. We can smell banana bread, so either Emma's baking or we're having a stroke. So that's where we're going to leave things for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Next time, in honor of the great Sam Neill, who passed on, dinosaur anime.
Dinodon.
We will see if there's anyone we can bring in to talk on that, because we do know our friend the Aussie Obelix is a big fan of dinosaurs, but I don't know how many anime...
Well, Princess of Perth is also a big fan of dinosaurs.
Oh, she is too. I don't think she wants to be on a podcast, though.
Oh, we can...
I've tried to drag her before. We'll see.
Yeah, but you did use dinosaurs.
Maybe. We'll see. Anyway...
I've got a dinosaur circle. Don't worry about it.
Okay, that's an interesting phrase. As always, big thank you to our Patreon members for their support. And if you do want more Kawaii-Fi content, including more info on the yokai history, if you will, of Cat Girls, you can find that on our Patreon page. Then also, obviously, we've got the socials and all that good stuff. We have a Tifa back. Yay! Hooray! So I got sick and then Tifa got sick with probably the same thing, despite being on the other side of the country and not you're seeing each other. It's going around. Hopefully that's kind of the last of it.
Yeah.
Kenny sends his regards, but, you know, smoking cat girl left him feeling literally ill. And I don't blame him.
Yeah, I can't do a cat girl episode.
But, he should be back next episode, I believe, as well. Do give us a little bit of flexibility next one, because we do have an important event to attend that weekend, and we need to figure out when we're doing stuff. So we'll fill you in on that on the pre-show if you would like to join over there. That's kind of it.
I think that's
it. Yeah, that's it. We're going to go do things. It's like 3 o'clock for Tifa in Melbourne, and I feel really bad about kind of like monopolizing your day on this one. So, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to Kawaii-Fi Radio. Thanks for joining us, and until next time,
watch some anime!
I really hope it's banana bread. I could so go banana bread.
What if you're having a stroke?
If it's not a stroke.
Oh, no.